After more than a week of protests, memorials today for George Floyd.
The reason why we're marching all over the world is we were like George. We couldn't breathe, not because there was something wrong with our lungs, but you wouldn't take your knee off our neck.
Plus, weekly jobless claims fall slightly, but stay at historic highs.
It's a pretty amazing moment in time when we see nearly 2 million unemployment claims in 1 week, and people are talking about how that's a good thing, you know, an improvement.
It's Thursday, June 4th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Hundreds of people gathered to attend George Floyd's memorial service in Minneapolis today. Civil rights leader Reverend Al Sharpton gave Floyd's eulogy.
George Floyd's story has been the story of black folks. Because ever since 401 years ago, the reason we could never be who we wanted and dreamed of being is you kept your knee on our neck.
Floyd's younger brother, Rodney Floyd, also spoke.
And, you know, learning from him how to be a man, everything he instilled us and taught us, he was doing him, but he was teaching us how to be a man because he was in this world already before us. And he gave us a lot of great lessons. And, I mean, one thing about a man, keep the definition as is, Floyd, responsibility, he will stand up for his family and friends, and he's great at that. And I want you guys to know that he will stand up for any injustice everywhere. Oof. Can y'all please say his name? Thank y'all. Oh my God.
At a gathering in Brooklyn that drew thousands, the memorial turned political, with crowds booing New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
So it will not be about words in this city. It will be about change. Change in the NYPD. It will be about change that you can see and believe, because you will see it with your own eyes. That's what we must make. Anything short of that is not enough. We will make peaceful change in this city once and for all.
De Blasio has been criticized for his handling of the protest in New York. Floyd's funeral will be held in Houston on Tuesday. Attorney General William Barr said today that 51 people have been arrested for federal crimes related to rioting during the protests that were sparked by Floyd's death. Barr blamed the violence on far-left Antifa groups and extremists of various political beliefs. Barr also said the federal investigation into Floyd's killing continues.
While the vast majority of police officers do their job bravely and righteously, it is undeniable that many African Americans lacked confidence in our American criminal justice system. This must change. Our Constitution mandates equal protection of the laws, and nothing less is acceptable.
The Justice Department is also considering whether to bring federal hate crime charges in the Ahmaud Arbery case. Today, the men accused of killing the 25-year-old while he was out running appeared in court. In the preliminary hearing, prosecutors said that Arbery, a black man, was, quote, chased, hunted down, and ultimately executed. They said the white man who shot him, Travis McMichael, was heard using a racial slur over Arbery's body. McMichael's attorneys denied that. And Google says staffers working for the presidential campaigns of Donald Trump and Joe Biden have been targeted with online phishing attacks from foreign hackers. The company says the Biden campaign was targeted by a China-backed group and the Trump campaign by an Iranian group. Phishing attacks are often an attempt to gain access to online email accounts. The attacks don't appear to have been successful. Coming up after the break, we'll take a look at the latest economic data. Weekly unemployment claims are falling, but very slowly. The Labor Department says 1.9 million more Americans filed for benefits last week. It's the first time that number has fallen below 2 million since mid-March. In other data out today, U.S. imports and exports posted their largest monthly decreases on record, widening the U.S. trade deficit to nearly $50 billion. But what do these numbers mean for the recovery? Joining me now is Wall Street Journal economics reporter Harriet Torrey. Harriet, let's talk about weekly jobless claims. That's been a big data point for the past few weeks. This is a very slow easing. What do economists say about just how slow it could be?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty amazing moment in time when we see nearly 2 million unemployment claims in 1 week and people are talking about how that's a good thing, you know, an improvement. Clearly, this is still an absolutely devastating number of people filing for unemployment. But the point that the economists are making is that we are seeing somewhat of a tapering off. You know, when the coronavirus shutdowns first hit, we were looking at numbers that were north of 6 million a week. So this is definitely down significantly. However, this is still a big, big, big number and a lot of people, you know, going without work. And what economists are saying is, as the weeks pass, is that it looks like more and more of these job losses are going to be permanent and the recovery in the labor market will be painfully slow.
How are economists feeling about the reopening? We're seeing a lot of places start to reopen now in different phases. Are economists feeling positive about that and the impact that will start to have on the economy?
Yes, somewhat positive. I think this is a cautious optimism. So government data tends to lag quite a long time. We only usually get reports, official government reports, sort of 4 to 6 weeks after the end of any given month. So we don't really have much to go on. We're still waiting to see the May jobs report, for instance. But real-time economic indicators that we can see, you know, in terms of credit card data on spending, in terms of restaurant bookings, in terms of people traveling through airports, those all did, you know, start to pick up in recent weeks. And it looks like they probably bottomed out in April and that April was maybe the worst month. Now, it is worth mentioning, though, that economists were saying that last week. And of course, what we've seen since then are widespread protests around the country and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fear. And although this hasn't really had much impact on the stock market, there is caution around the fact that this could lead to further coronavirus infections.
What about the expectations for tomorrow when we'll be seeing the monthly picture for May?
So what people are hoping is that the May jobs report will be the worst one that we get. I mean, it's going to be dramatic. We're going to see the types of unemployment rates probably that we haven't seen in modern history since the end of the Second World War. This is going to be dramatic, but the hope is that this will be the worst of the shutdown impact and that after this jobs report, that hopefully people will, as states gradually reopen, that people will get back to work and that the unemployment rate will go down. It will probably be a while before it goes down to 3.5%, which is what we saw before the coronavirus pandemic hit. But the hope is that this will be kind of the bottoming out.
Let's turn to trade. The latest numbers show a record decline in both imports and exports for the U.S. How much of a concern is that for the recovery? What's the practical impact of that decline for average Americans?
Well, so what we were seeing in this data was that, you know, in the month of April, everything was, you know, businesses were shut down, stores were closed, grocery stores were kind of the only real thing that was still open. So we definitely saw this big dramatic drop in imports and exports. Now, what economists are saying is that probably what we will see going forward is that imports will start to pick up from this point. And the reason for that is that imports are heavily, you know, correlated to consumer spending. So once people start getting out there and shopping, you know, they might be buying new things for the new, you know, outfits that are made overseas, like swimsuits, things for their yard, you know, all these things that are made abroad, as well as many things that you buy in supermarkets and so on. Many medical products are made overseas. So imports will probably pick up faster than exports because we are in the middle of a global downturn. And so, you know, American-made products, things like aircraft and machinery and automobiles, it will probably take longer for exports to pick up than imports. So what that means is that the deficit will continue to widen, but which is obviously a bad thing. And the US has run a pretty wide deficit for a long time. But the difference between now and, let's say, a year ago or 2 years ago is that the reason that the deficit was widening before was because the US economy was very strong. So people were spending more money and they were buying more imports. You know, things were coming into the country that people wanted to consume. Whereas now the reason that we're seeing declines in both imports and exports is because of weak demand, which is obviously not a good signal for the economy.
It seems like it was a very long time ago that we were talking about the U.S. and China signing phase one of their trade deal. I'm wondering what the trade data can tell us about the U.S. relationship with China in terms of trade. How is the pandemic impacting that?
Well, I mean, the pandemic impacted the deficit with China, you know, month over month. But the deficit has actually shrunk with China, you know, on a sort of year over year basis, which of course is a good thing overall. But again, this is a sign of weak demand in many ways. Of course, it does have to do with the trade agreement as well. But there is so much volatility at the moment both in the monthly numbers and also in the trade picture more generally. So for instance, as part of the phase one trade deal, China committed to buying a number of US exports, things like soybeans over a multi-year period. And now that, you know, there is a lot of tension between Washington and Beijing over China's handling of pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong, as well as the coronavirus pandemic, we've seen that some Chinese state-controlled companies have cancelled some shipments from US foreign exporters. So, you know, the tensions are very high between the two countries, and that is likely to have a continued impact on trade as well.
All right, Harriet, we've done these check-ins a few times in the past few weeks, and my question to you always is, what does the latest data tell us about the overall picture of the U.S. economy right now?
Well, I mean, I think the trade data is a sign. Economists are predicting that that the economy is not going to grow at all in the second quarter, that it is going to contract by a phenomenal amount, on a scale that we have not seen at all before. You know, we're seeing estimates of GDP contracting at an annual rate of sort of 40 to 50%. I mean, this is off the scale when we usually see growth rates of sort of 2%. To see this massive, enormous drop is overwhelming. And of course, trade is going to be, you know, a widening deficit is going to hurt that even more. Although, to be honest, the trade deficit is a relatively small piece of this picture when what the big drops, you know, the reason that we'll see this massive contraction in GDP is more to do with overall consumer spending.
Wall Street Journal reporter Harriet Torrey. Harriet, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And finally, today marks the 31st anniversary of the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre in Beijing. We reported earlier this week that this year, for the first time, authorities in Hong Kong refused to allow a public vigil commemorating the victims, citing public health concerns. But that didn't stop thousands of people from holding a peaceful memorial in the city's Victoria Park anyway. Tensions are high in Hong Kong over new legislation passed in Beijing that limits some of the city's autonomy. Our reporter Natasha Khan was at the vigil.
While what China has announced so far about the legislation doesn't specifically talk about the vigil, and in fact, the Hong Kong government has been clear to say that the freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, and other freedoms will still be retained for Hong Kong people. One of the hallmarks of the vigil in the past number of years has been calling, for example, for the end of one-party rule. So that's been a common chant in past vigils. And also sort of it is an event in which there is a lot of dissent. So the organizers and participants have expressed their concern and fears that the future of the vigil might be at stake. But before we have more clarity on what the law says and sort of how it might be applied, it is a bit unclear as to how that's going to unfold.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.